Yeah, I believe that. Let's go to the Revolution Hotline. Ethan Skolnick from the Palm Beach Post is on. As I said before, he's probably the best educated guest we've ever had. He got his degree from Johns Hopkins, then he showed off and got a master's from Columbia, too. So you're way too smart to be talking to us, Ethan, but I do appreciate you breaking into the show today because we have been sitting around here for an hour and a half trying to make sense of what happened last night. Do you have any clue or have you been able to get a handle on what exactly went wrong last night?
Well, there are a lot of things. And, you know, it starts with the fact that this defensive strategy that Popovich is using on LeBron, I think, has gotten in his head to a little bit of a degree here. You know, the Spurs have basically recognized that nobody else on the Heat is going to hurt him. You know, Bosch has not played well now for 3 weeks. Wade is limited in what he seems to be able to do consistently. And so basically what they've decided is we're not going to allow LeBron to get to the paint. And usually this season, that's been a winning strategy for Miami because LeBron has shot the ball better from the outside than at any point in his career. Now, though, he seems to be thinking too much. He's waiting to take that shot. He's not making it when he does take it. And, you know, then, you know, you add to the fact that he ends up with no free throws last night. And, you know, it all kind of starts with him. And I think that what's happened is that the burden of other guys not playing well has started to wear on LeBron a little bit. And when he can't save them, then it kind of filters back down to the rest of the team. And I just thought they got frustrated, lost confidence, and then they just got steamrolled on the other end. So it's not over for them. They haven't lost back-to-back games since early January, but last night was not encouraging.
Yeah, and the thing is, we always get in this thing where we compare LeBron to Michael or Kobe, or you know, whether it's his contemporaries or great players from the past. But I don't remember seeing Michael look lost to some degree, or certainly frustrated at times, especially early in his career. But nothing quite like last night, where you felt like if this guy would just put his foot on the gas, he could do a little more. But he doesn't look willing or able to do it tonight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This year, watching him every night, you know, I felt like he'd kind of put a lot of those problems in the past, you know, where he was just reacting, just basically believing he was the best player in the world. There wasn't anything you were going to do to stop him, and he was going to prove it in a variety of ways. This is really the most lost I've seen him since the Dallas series in 2011. It's funny because he does internalize a lot of this stuff, and he does, although he says he doesn't hear it, some of it kind of trickles back to him. And, you know, the fact that he took full responsibility last night, I thought was partially for the world to hear, but it was partially for himself. And he has said that before. Sometimes he'll put a message out there, and it is really a message he's giving to himself, and he's forcing himself to kind of, because he's putting it out there on a public forum, he's forcing himself to actually abide by it. I see a guy, you know, again, he does everything well. There's nothing he doesn't do well. I mean, I'm constantly amazed. You know, by everything from his passing to his ability to defend five different players to his ball handling to, and again, this year to his outside shot. I mean, he shot 40.6% from three. He was one of the better volume shooters in the league from 16 to 23 feet. There's nothing he can't do when he feels like when he just lets himself do it. And again, I just think in this series, he saw the way they were defending him early. He realizes he's not going to get any help. And so he's like a tick slow on everything in this series. And I just don't, you know, again, I think that, you know, with Jordan, what's interesting about Jordan is I don't remember it either, but I think over time, memories start to fade a little bit. I'm sure there were times that he struggled. I know there were games, if you look percentage-wise, that he struggled. They're just not quite as fresh in our mind. I think LeBron will snap out of it in this series. But, you know, that was the last couple games. It's like he's waiting for the double team to come so that he can pass instead of when he's got single coverage on Leonard just going strong. And that's the one thing I think that's the most concerning, or should be the most concerning for Heat fans.
Yeah, there's no question that Jordan had off nights. I watched him enough, you know, during his career to know that he had off nights. But I never watched Jordan and thought if you went up to him and said, what are you trying to do right now, that he would say, hell, I don't know. But that's how LeBron looked last night. And again, he's been so deferential, as you said, And to his detriment at times, he is almost too much of a team player, if you can be. I mean, we talked about it yesterday. He is at the other end of the spectrum from a guy like Carmelo Anthony. He plays great defense. He's almost too deferential on the offensive end. And right now, he is passing to guys who look like infielders who are praying to God that the ball is not hit to them. I mean, you saw a bunch of mid-range shots last night with Bosch and Wade, and they're like, I know this ain't going in, but I got to put it up. I'm wide open.
Right. Well, that's exactly true, and you hit on the two guys that are the biggest problem right now. I mean, look, Mario Chalmers is Mario Chalmers. He's going to do what he just did over the last two games, have a 19.0 turnover game and then have a 0.4 turnover game. that's part of the roller coaster of Mario Chalmers. You know, Battier is on the bench right now, one of the guys, maybe the guy that counted on as much as anybody but the big three the whole year, and he's not on the court. They're not expecting offense from Haslam. Anderson has been great for them, but he's a limited player. I mean, they know what he is and what he isn't. Cole is a guy they don't want really doing too much. So when you start to break all that down, you say, okay, so who can help them now? Well, essentially they've turned to Mike Miller, who for reasons I don't understand, when he was completely healthy the whole year, wasn't playing, and I was constantly calling for him to play, and I think now we're seeing why. He's completely healthy. He can rebound, he can pass, and obviously he can shoot. And but beyond him, I mean, it's on Wade and Bosch, and the reality is that Chris's head, I think, is you talk about somebody who is having head problems, you know, mindset problems right now or psychological issues. I don't think he knows what he is right now. They've confused him at this point because they've turned him into strictly a perimeter player. They got him to move further and further away from the basket, basically for analytical, analytics reasons, because they thought it was better for him to shoot threes and long twos. But the problem is it took away his aggressiveness even more, and now I don't think he knows how to get himself into the game. And then there's Wade, and the biggest concern about Wade is not offensively right now. You know, even when he wasn't playing great offense in the first couple rounds and he was hurt, all the rest of that, and he still is not nearly 100%, he was defending at a pretty high level. Last night was as bad as I've seen him defensively in a long time. He really, I don't know if he wasn't competing or he wasn't just, he was gambling too much. He was responsible for a lot of those threes getting open in the corner. And on the offensive end, again, I mean, nobody's expecting him to score 27 right now. But it seems to me like because he's not nearly as efficient as he was and he's kind of forcing his jumper, which is not his strength, because he can't get to the basket or get to the rim. So, you know, really, LeBron looks around at all that and is like, okay, now, I got to, you know, it's on me. And then he's facing a defense that's saying, fine, it's on you, but you're going to beat us, you're going to make 18-foot jumpers, and we're just going to leave them for you, and you can sit there and think about them if you want, but that's the shot that you're going to take. So I understand why he's a little bit discombobulated right now. I just think that, you know, he needs one game where he's feeling his jumper. I've seen those games. He makes 6, 7, 8, 9 in a row at times. He needs to, that may be the only option for him right now is to just start making more jumpers.
Edith Skolnick of the Palm Beach Post joining us in the zone on the Revolution Hotline. And, yeah, that was the thing, too, we were talking earlier, is that he's not putting pressure on their defense, which, again, I think they look extremely comfortable on the offensive end to San Antonio because they're not really having to work too much on defense. They double LeBron and then somebody misses a jump shot. That's a pretty good plan. Now, I don't know specifically what they're trying to do, and Greg Popovich, I'm going to play this clip because I don't want to misquote him, but he was asked about it last night, as I'm sure you saw.
What did you see from your team that got that kind of separation from Miami?
I think we played real solid defense.
LeBron James, 9 straight to end the quarter. What are you asking for from your defense on him?
I can't tell you that.
Okay. Thanks, Pop.
I love that.
It's good stuff, for sure. But, I mean, again, whatever they're doing,
I feel
it's working.
For Doris.
Yes.
Yeah, well, no, I feel for Doris. It's working because it is so simple. I mean, really. I mean, we're going to give tremendous credit to Pop, and he's the best in the business right now. But the reality is he had 10 days, and he basically decided, okay, 2007, we stepped back. LeBron didn't have any help, and we told him, okay, make jump shots to beat us. It's 6 years later. LeBron's better. His jumper is better, but his teammates haven't been better lately. So let's try the same strategy until basically they force us out of it, and they haven't forced him out of it. So I mean, that's where we are now. With that said, I don't want to overreact because you know we're just 3 days away from the Heat having blown out San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's some trends that have developed that indicate that Spoelstra needs to look at some changes. I mean, the first thing is the Wade-LeBron playing together thing isn't working. LeBron has played better in this series when he's had a floor spacer out there with him, or a couple of them, in Allen and Miller. And I think, you know, even if this is a hard thing to do, he's not going to sit Dwayne at the start of game, but he needs to look at curtailing his minutes and playing one of those two guys, or playing those two guys in tandem a little bit more, because I just think LeBron will be more comfortable driving and drawing the second defender, even if that's all he can do, if he's kicking out to one of those two guys. But when he's driving and kicking out to Wade or Bosch right now, the results are not good. So I think that's something they need to look at.
What's the perception of Spoelstra down there? I know what I think, but I don't know anything, and I don't live there. So what's the general perception of him in the South Beach area?
It's evolved to be a very positive one. It was not in 2000. Look, let's be honest. There weren't many Heat fans paying attention in his first 2 years before LeBron came, when I thought Eric did his best work, because he took two very limited teams with Wade and nothing else to the playoffs. You know, in 2010-11, people were very down on him, obviously, and I didn't think he had a very good series against the Mavericks, and Carlisle exploited him. But, when you win 27 straight games, when LeBron buys in to what you're doing, it has become a positive reputation. And there have been a lot of things that Spo's done this year that I think have been very, very positive. I think, you know, the evolution of the offense over the course of the regular season has been a really good thing. It seems to me that what's happened now, though, is that they're stuck back in sort of old habits. It's like all the work that's been done over the past 12 months evaporates in an instant, and they're back to standing around watching each other and hoping LeBron saves them and in isolation situations. So I think it's gotten much better, but I'll tell you what, if they lose this series in five games, it can flip back very quickly.
Yeah, I don't want to call them front runners, but you have seen when there are issues that whether LeBron tries to take over or whatever, it just doesn't look real comfortable for the Heat at this point. And then he made, of course, the comments a while back after he had a huge game about, I just reverted back to my Cleveland days. And I didn't see many comments from the other players, especially, you know, Bosch and Wade, but that had to be, I mean, I thought it was a slap in the face. I didn't hear them comment about it. I'm sure publicly they were very PC about it, but any idea, any backlash from the team or the other players about that comment and that thought process by LeBron?
Well, they didn't say it directly, but I think Dwayne's comments, which came after the next game that they lost, or in game six, where he basically said that, you know, it would help to get Chris and me some more opportunities. That was a public slapback at that comment from LeBron. I mean, look, Dwayne, again, is sensitive to these things. He hears it. He knows what the perceptions are. He certainly doesn't want it coming from inside his own room. And we don't really know right now how hurt Dwayne is. I'll say this is very strange, because for about 6 weeks this season, prior to this bone bruise, he was playing at a very, very high level again. Like, I mean, he was explosive. His efficiency was as good as it's been during his career. And then he got this thing in March. It was kind of mysterious. They didn't really talk about it much. Then suddenly he started sitting a lot of games towards the end of the season. They made it out to be the maintenance program, but we found out that it was really more injury related for him. And it's one of those things. I don't think it's something that can be surgically repaired. I just think he needs a lot of rest. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not something he can get during the playoffs.
Okay, I have a question for you about his departure from the court between the third and fourth quarter. It doesn't happen every game, but it happens regularly enough, and I'm going...
Justin talks about this almost on a daily basis.
I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. I'm just curious what exactly he's doing, because he's sort of, with a smirk, said, oh, you know, whatever, you know, and he's made some different comments. But what is going on in there between the third and fourth quarter? Because he does come back looking really good afterwards.
Yeah, well, you know, we sort of have suspicions on Press Row about what kind of cortisone he's getting between the third and fourth, because he has come back. I think that the public line on all of this is that he goes back kind of adjust. He's got basically a pad underneath his knee sleeve where he adjusts. He kind of tapes the kneecap into place so that it doesn't rub against his bone bruise. And that, so the sort of the story that we've been given is that, or he's given us, is that he basically goes back there to adjust everything. Who knows? I mean, one of these things is, we always know when you cover a team like this, is about a month after the season, we'll get the truth
sure.
about how bad it was, what was really going on. I mean, last year during the postseason, he didn't want to talk about it at all, and then he ended up getting drained twice during the playoffs and getting it operated on a month later. I don't think this is a surgery situation, but I also think, look, this is what Heat fans have to get used to. I mean, this is him for the rest of his career. I mean, he took a beating for 7, 8, 9 years, and, you know, everybody told me he'd have to adjust his game, and he couldn't just keep, you know, kamikaze into the basket. But this is a cumulative effect of all that, and that's something that Heat fans should be concerned about, because not just now, but, I mean, 2014 is only a season away, and all these guys have opt-outs, and,
yeah.
you know, that's the big thing. I mean, I don't think Dwayne's going to leave $42 million on the table, which is what he'd get paid for 2 years after that, and if he's coming back, but he's 33 years old, and he's not ever going to be physically himself again, then how does that affect LeBron's decision? And that's really the big picture situation here.
I was going to ask you, statistically speaking, they are way behind the eight ball in this now, being down 2-1. Teams in their situation after losing Game 3 have only won once out of the last 13 times, as I'm sure you know. And the mm-hmm. one time that happened, of course, was the Mavericks coming back on them a couple of years ago. But do you think the outcome of this series impacts how this team looks next year? Or do you think they're going to come together, you know, however it's going to work out with the contracts either way?
They don't have a lot of flexibility after this season anyway. And so I've always felt they would ride it out to 14. I mean, a lot of guys have options, so they're coming back, and they're not really pieces that anybody else is going to want at this stage. You know, James Jones has, you know, another year. Rashard Lewis has an option. You know, Chris Anderson, somebody they want to re-sign. Cole and Chalmers are under contract. They hold the option on Chalmers. So there's not really a lot they can do around the fringes. I mean, it's going to be a little bit strange if they amnesty Mike Miller after he's one guy who comes through for them in the finals, but they may do that. But as far as the other guys, I mean, obviously they're not moving LeBron. They're not moving Dwayne. They'll never trade Dwayne. They're going to wait to see what Dwayne does in a year, but I just don't think they can do that just because of what he's meant to the community. And Riley's more loyal than people give him credit for in that regard, sometimes to a fault. The only one is Bosch. I mean, that's the one guy that maybe they'll explore something for. This rumor that's out there about trading him for the number 4 overall pick, people are not obviously paying attention to the fact that Pat Riley doesn't like rookies. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But especially when Riley's 68, 69 years old and looking at maybe trying to, you know, just to drag this thing out as long as he can, he's not going to start a rebuilding process here. But if you could get two really good pieces for Chris, would they look to change the dynamic a little bit? That's the only thing I think that could be possible.
Ethan, great stuff. I appreciate it very much, and we'll see how it shakes out. But certainly this has become a lot more interesting series than a lot of people expected, although I guess a lot of people probably expected that would be pretty tight.
I said 7. I still think it's 7.
Yeah.
I'm just not so confident that Miami wins that game on home floor at this point.
I think you're probably right. Ethan,
right.
Thanks for the time,
thanks,
man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care. It's Ethan Skolnick of the Palm Beach Post, and you can follow him on Twitter if you're interested, at Ethan J. Skolnick, S-K-O-L-N-I-C-K. It says that the J in his name stands for juice, but don't ask why, so I didn't. I don't know what that means. So maybe next time we get him on, I'm going to ask him.
Great.